This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
So, Rada Blank started out life as a playwright in New York, and for years she struggled as a playwright. She never quite got that big production that put her on the map. Like a lot of playwrights, she taught writing in public schools and community centers. But unlike a lot of playwrights, Rada also started a sideline as a rapper. She performed in New York under the name Rodimus Prime. Somewhere in the middle of all this, Rada wrote a movie. It's called The 40-Year-Old Version. That's V-E-R-S-I-O-N, version. It's about a struggling playwright named Rada who decides to pursue a career as a rapper.
No doubt. So what you call yourself?
Huh?
So what they call you,
Rodimus Prime.
What?
Rodimus Prime.
Oh, shit, like Optimus.
Yeah, shit.
What happened next was like something out of a struggling playwright's fantasy. First, Lena Waithe got hold of the script and offered to actually produce it. And she wanted Rada to both direct and star in it. Then the movie got into the Sundance Film Festival, which is a big deal for anybody's first movie. Then Rada won an award for directing at that festival, making her only the second black woman to ever win that award. You're so much better lit than I am.
When you say lit...
You are both more lit than I am in the colloquial sense, but you're also better lit in the technical sense
okay.
of...
Because there is a distinction. I appreciate that.
I spoke to Rada Blank last week. I just wonder, just on a personal level, what it was for you like to move from, as you say, this sort of struggling in the theater world to then winning the director's award at Sundance. Just what ran through your mind in that moment? How was that?
In that moment, I was like, oh, shit, they got that wrong. But I see myself having already won some other awards. Like the fact that black people go to see the movie and say it's black as fuck. Like that's a huge compliment to me. When New Yorkers see the film and they say, oh my God, you know, that's my hometown and now I'm in it, you know, that's a huge award for me.
Rada.
Excuse me, ladies. Rada,
hey. How are you?
Hey. Just puckering up to the patrons as usual. How are you?
Good.
Archie tells me you're teaching.
I've been teaching for a while now.
Well, theater misses you.
Does it?
Mm-hmm.
Is it looking for me? Because I've been here.
So, Rada, what was your theater work like? What were your concerns when you were writing primarily for theater, and how has that, if at all, how has that made its way into the 40-year-old version?
You know, I feel like as a storyteller, I've always kind of, even if it was comedic, it was always through the lens of social commentary and social justice. Mm-hmm. And theater was where I really kind of lived in that world.
No. It's about gentrification. And how this young couple struggles to you didn't like it.
The idea is powerful.
But?
It rang a little inauthentic.
Okay. Well, thank you for that note. I appreciate it.
There's something there.
Okay.
I just wish you hadn't shied away from darkness. I mean, if you're going to call it Harlem Ave, you got to give me Harlem Ave.
I should write in a teen mother shooting up in an alley.
No.
It's nothing to speak ill of those Black playwrights who are getting produced. I just feel like the people who show up tend to satisfy the urges of a particular sect of people. I call them the silver hair patrons. These are people who can afford between $100 and $150 for a ticket to theater, you know? Right. And so they then dictate what shows up on stage. And so it's their version of Blackness. One that is, you know, conflict shows up as pain, you know, in a Black story, or they're dancing and they're singing, or it's a period piece. But, you know, what it definitely avoids is being an indictment of white privilege and white culture.
Look. Sweetheart.
Yes.
There's definitely a voice under all those words.
All those words.
But the writing needs work. The good news is, I still need a writer for my Harriet Tubman musical.
You know, I think, you know, people celebrate artists when they deem the person's art either palatable or marketable or something they can monetize. But until then, we're all just considered flaky artists. You know what I mean? And we're always confronting, whether it's the gatekeeper or the audience or the silver-haired patron, there's always this kind of dance, which can sometimes feel like pandering, so that we can get in the door and support ourselves and feed ourselves. You know what I mean? So there are all of these little compromises, I think, that you make on this path as an artist. I think the story is about someone who may or may not survive the compromise she's made.
Yeah. And one thing I noticed about the movie is that you kind of set up this dichotomy, right? Theater is a place that's got all these gatekeepers around it, all these levels to make it through. There's your agent, there's the producer, there's all these things, these screens, I guess, from your sort of vision until the whatever the product is. Where this hip hop world, you like, there's this hip hop producer D that you, and the first night that you work together, it's you saying your rhymes the way that you want them to be. It's like this hip hop as a place for control.
Yeah.
Yo, it's poverty porn. You regular Blacks are just such a yawn. Yo, if I want to get on, better write me some poverty porn. Yeah.
How was that last one? Good. Felt good. If my kids could see me now. Not my kids. I don't have kids. I mean, my students. I'm a teacher.
There were so many Native New Yorkers working on the film that had this dogged, you know, determination to tell a New York story from a different angle. You know, my DP, Eric Bronco, was one of them. He's from the Bronx. Had never shot on black and white film before. And so we both were like kind of obsessed with how Black people and people of color would show up in those shades of gray. So, you know, yeah, I'd get intimidated, but then I realized, you know, I, not to make it sound like I'm a priest who gets a calling from the higher source, but it felt like that. You know, some days I had to be like, girl, it ain't about you. Just do your job, you know?
I love what you said about New York. And I, you know, as a native New Yorker myself, I found myself very excited. There's a All moment right. where you can sort of see the train going under where it comes up, you know, from 125th Street.
And yeah.
It seemed like you were kind of playing to me with these, like, the way New York has been seen in film, like that the black and white brings to, you know, any number of New York films that we could mention. But it just seemed like you were playing within a tradition, but then trying to also stretch it, move it
right.
forward.
Right. Like, what we're doing is we're not inventing something new. I just think it's how and who is doing it. You know, I guess because I am black and I identify as a woman, you know, that is considered groundbreaking. But really, I'm just trying to create something that retrofits something into the canon of classic New York films. You know, a story that should have been told 30, 40 years ago. But so it feels both fresh and nostalgic, if that makes any sense. Like another compliment I feel I've gotten from audiences is when people think the film takes place in the 90s. It doesn't. It takes place now. We couldn't get a up-to-date bus, you know, city bus. And so, but it lends itself, you know, as the film opens, you hear Electric Relaxation by Tribe. And that was one of many music videos in my digital lookbook. That's all I was trying to do. It's like, we're so used to seeing hip hop like kind of oversaturated, oversexualized. And I think black and white forces a certain, you know, level of cool, you know, and vulnerability also for the culture.
And just with you, what's your relationship to the theater now? Is it, do you think that there is more opportunity for black artists to have control in a way that maybe isn't the case? Or what do you think?
You know what? I couldn't answer that now. I probably have to answer that in 2 or 3 years from now, because I think, you know, there's this movement of theater artists. They call themselves We See You. And they are calling out what they call WAT, White American Theater, around all of the disparity in terms of who gets to green light projects. I think an immediate response to that was numerous theaters have employed black women as, you know, artistic directors, people at the gate, so to speak. I feel there's a shift, but I feel like we won't know for a while.
Are you kind of off on this movie trajectory, or do you see yourself going back? And
I will always be a playwright. Always. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's where I really got to cut my teeth and learn story and earn endings and, you know, take my obsessive deep dives into characters and why they do what they do. But yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how theater, yeah, I think theater is either going to love me or hate me because, you know, but that's not very different from how my career was before. They wasn't fucking with me then because I don't think I would be the playwright they wanted me to be. You know, I don't know. It'll be bittersweet to finally have my plays, which in TV, they've become writing samples, to have my plays actually be plays again, you know?
Yeah. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you.
It.
This was awesome.
Rada Blank is the writer, director, and star of The 40-Year-Old Virgin, which has just premiered on Netflix. You've been listening to the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm Vincent Cunningham.